Well, the time now is 3 o'clock. It's time to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for this afternoon's prom. And good heavens, it's that man again. It's presented by Petroc Trelawney.
Hello, thanks Ian. Saturday matinees have become a key part of the proms in recent years. Usually the spotlight is on Cadogan Hall, but this week the Royal Albert Hall itself is packed to capacity for a very special afternoon concert by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and its globally lauded music director Andris Nelsons. The programme? Well, let's let the players tell us about that.
The concert starts with Dvorak Symphony No. 8, which I personally have played many, many times, but never as spectacular as this.
After the interval, we switch into opera mode. We're doing songs from Otello and from the opera Eugen Onegin, and we're really lucky to be joined by Andris' wife, Christine, which is a real privilege. And we're finishing off with waltzes by Johann Strauss.
We're going to play the Emperor Waltz, which, again, I've played hundreds of times, but a new interpretation by Nelsons. Very interesting. And finally, Crash Bang Wallop to finish, Thunder and Lightning Polka.
So it's a bit like a New Year concert for us, so full of fun and vitality.
Bryony Morrison, who plays second violin in the CBSO, and the orchestra's veteran timpanist, Peter Hill. Well, the last of the players coming on to a crowded platform here at the Royal Albert Hall. It's Dvorak 8 that begins, his most bucolic and idyllic symphony, in effect his pastoral symphony, written in the seclusion of the countryside. It's in the summer of 1889 that Dvorak retired to his country home at Vysoka, away from the pressures of urban life, far from the demands of performers and publishers, and he realised he was ready to tackle a new symphony. It had been 4 years since his last. Wanted, he said, to compose something different from the other symphonies, with individual thoughts worked out in a new way. Composition process wonderfully untroubled. Melodies simply pour out of me, said Dvorak. Began his new symphony on August the 26th. The first movement was finished in 2 weeks, second a week later, and the remaining two movements in just a couple of days each. That said, it wasn't all plain sailing. He had real problems with the theme of the last movement, which went through some 10 stages before it reached its final shape. Well, the work abounds with Czech folk tunes and the sounds of the Czech countryside. Most notably, he utilises different wind instruments to sound a number of bird calls. Some speculation, too, that there might have been some sort of story behind the slow movement. There is a story connected with it, a contemporary critic wrote, but the composer keeps it to himself and his audience would gladly know, since it's impossible not to feel that the music tries hard to speak intelligibly of events outside itself. Lawrence Jackson, CBSO leader, takes his place this Saturday afternoon here at the Royal Albert Hall. And the orchestra stands as its music director, Andris Nelsons, makes his way towards the platform to open our proms matinee with Dvorak's Symphony No. 8. We'll be right back. Andras Nelson's conducting the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra in Dvořák's 8th Symphony. Live this Saturday afternoon here at the BBC Proms. When he was rehearsing that glorious brass fanfare in the last movement, the Czech conductor, Rafael Kubelik, addressed the players of his orchestra, "Gentlemen, in Bohemia, the trumpets never call to battle. They always call to the dance." And a sense of rustic country dancing, the beauty of nature, the cries of birds, smell of the open air perpetuate that work written by Dvořák in the country in the summer of 1889. Andras Nelson's back on the platform. Terrific form. You might have read the accounts in the newspapers. He's been recovering from suffering concussion while working in Bayreuth. Cancelled several concerts, but bringing plenty of energy to the Royal Albert Hall today. Marie-Christine Zupančič, principal flute. Jennifer Galloway, principal ergo. Robert Pickup, principal clarinet. Elspeth Dutch, principal horn. The trumpeters, section led by Jonathan Holland. Trombones, led by Edward Jones. Mentioned that suggestion from Dvořák himself that there might be some kind of story behind the slow movement. His main biographer, Surek, picked that up, saying that it tells a tale of medieval chivalry, a lady being serenaded, tumultuous battles succeeded by nostalgic reminiscence. Very colourful suggestions, but none of those ideas ever actually corroborated by Dvořák himself. Well, Radio 3 live at the Royal Albert Hall this Saturday, home of the BBC Proms. After that feast from the Czech countryside, we head to the opera and the ballroom in the second half of our matinee. A waltz and a polka from Johann Strauss, and the soprano, Christina Opolais, the wife of Andras Nelson's, will sing from Tchaikovsky's Eugen Onegin and Verdi's Otello, the beautiful Willow Song. The willow has long been a symbol in song. And in our interval feature now, the singer and musicologist Faye Heald, accompanied by John Bowden of the band Bellowhead, investigate the history of this tree in music and its significance in I Will Wear the Green Willow.
After the interval, we'll hear the soprano Christina Opolais sing Desdemona's Willow Song from Verdi's Otello. This is how Desdemona, in Shakespeare's Othello, says she came to know the song.
My mother had a maid called Barbara. She was in love, and he she loved proved mad and did forsake her. She had a song of willow, an old thing 'twas, but it expressed her fortune, and she died singing it. That song tonight will not go from my mind. I have much to do but go hang my head all at one side and sing it, like poor Barbara.
The Willow Song is not Verdi's work, nor did Shakespeare write it for his play. Shakespeare had, Ben Jonson rather disparagingly remarked, small Latin and less Greek. He had enough of both, though, learned at the grammar school in Stratford, to borrow plots and dress them with classical references. But the glover's son from a market town in the middle of England was clearly well-versed in the vernacular culture of his society. He knew the crafts of the mechanicals in A Midsummer Night's Dream. He knew local botany and its lore, and he knew too that his audience knew folk songs. The snippets Ophelia sings as she hands round her flowers make this clear. It shouldn't be forgotten, too, that Will Kemp, for whom Shakespeare wrote clown's parts such as Feste, was a Morris dancer who famously danced from London to Norwich for a bet. The Willow Song, Desdemona says, is an old thing that perfectly encapsulated Barbara's desolation after her lover abandoned her. It expressed her fortune. This, again, is how folk songs work and survive. They are old hand-me-downs that live because they speak eloquently of the human condition, our joys, our griefs. They express our fortune. They get into our minds and stay there. That Shakespeare incorporates the Willow Song into his drama suggests it was well known in Elizabethan and Jacobean times. The earliest written version of the tune dates from 1583 in the Lute Book of Thomas Dallas, now in Trinity College, Dublin. These are the words of the earliest manuscript of the lyrics.
The poor soul sat sighing by a sycamore tree, sing willow, 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 with his hand on his bosom, his head on his knee, sing willow, willow, willow.
Many versions of the song have come down the centuries to us, including one called A Lover's Complaint, copied, so the scholar Ernest Brenneker says, from an item in Samuel Pepys's collection. All involve a forsaken lover, interestingly usually a man, and all have the willow, willow refrain.
Sing all a green willow, 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 willow. Ah me, the green willow must be my garland.
And the willow occurs again and again in traditional song as a symbol not simply of grief, but grief as a consequence of betrayal and abandonment.
As I pass by a willow tree.
Here is Mae Bradley singing the song known simply as Willow Tree.
That willow leaf blew down on me. I picked it up, it would not break. I've passed my love, it would not speak.
Mae Bradley, from a Welsh travelling family and a woman who brought up 15 children, recorded in a pub in Ludlow in 1965 by Fred Hammer. This is included in the magnificent Voice of the People anthology, 20 CDs of traditional songs and tunes. This is where Eliza Carthy heard it and then realised she already knew it.
You'll take my hand, but not my heart.
A family of musicians her own musical family often stayed with, the Stradlings, sang The Willow Tree. Like Desdemona and her Willow Song, Eliza had learned it from people singing in their home, and it expressed her fortune. Here is Eliza Carthy's version from her album Anglicana.
As I pass by a willow tree, that willow leaf blew down on me. I picked it up, it would not break. I passed my love, he would not speak.
The song has travelled a long way in time and musically, but you can hear the connection between Eliza Carthy's singing and Mae Bradley's. Willow Tree begins with a leaf blowing down. This is a potent image of her abandonment, but the girl picks it up and, the song says, it would not break. Willow leaves are tough and the girl is tenacious, challenging. You'll take my hand but not my heart. The willow image acquires some complexity, a certain elusiveness. Many music lovers know The Banks of Green Willow as a beautifully melancholic piece by George Butterworth, but the traditional song whose tune he used is quite harrowing. John Bowden, the singer and fiddle player in Bellahead, is here with me and sings this. John, we'll hear the song, but first, what struck you about it? Why did you want to sing it?
Well, I was quite interested in the ambiguity of the song. It's about a sea captain who elopes with a girl who's pregnant by him, and they go off on board ship, and it's kind of going okay. She has the baby and that's all fine, but then after a while the ship stops moving and there's no reason for this to happen. The wind is blowing, but they don't seem to be making any ground. So this is where sailors' superstition kicks in, and all the sailors believe that it's because they have this girl on board with her baby, and decide that basically that she's a fairy in the kind of demonic sense rather than the sort of Victorian children's book sense. So they do away with her and chuck her overboard. And it's not altogether clear what happens then? Because there's this verse about see how she doth swim. And it's not clear that she's actually drowning. It may be that if she is indeed a fairy, then maybe she's sort of travelling across the ocean in some kind of magical sort of form. But then at the end, it's clear she's going to be buried by the banks of Green Willow. So it's all very odd and ambiguous. So this is the last three verses of the song, which is where all the horrific stuff happens. Edited highlights. Well, he's tied a napkin all around her head, and he's tied it round so softly, and he's thrown her right over, both her and her baby. See how she doth swim, me boys, and it's see how she doth swagger. She will never leave off swimming till she comes to some harbour. And she shall have a coffin, and the nails shall shine yellow. And me love, she will be buried by the banks of Green Willow.
The Banks of Green Willow is what's known as a Jonah ballad. It's interesting how there is no mention of Willow until the final line. After the elopement, the labour and birth and the sacrifice, the murder of the mother and her child, the Banks of Green Willow epitomise desolation and grief. There is a song dating from the 1820s in which a Cockney costermonger, that's a stallholder selling fruit and veg, vows, because his fiancée has been sentenced to transportation, to wear sprigs of green willow in his hat for 12 months and a day. A century and a half later, in 1976, a version of this hits the charts, stays there for weeks, and makes it to Top of the Pops. Steel I Span, whose name comes from a character in a traditional song, with a waywardly chirpy expression of desolation. She sounds delighted that he's gone. Most of the words come from another song entirely, the jocular Fare Thee Well, Cold Winter. There are many versions of All Around My Hat, and you can find them on The Full English, which is the English Folk Dance and Song Society's new digital portal, allowing free access to the manuscripts of many of the early collectors. I'm going to sing one from there with a somewhat more melancholy melody than Steel Eyes. George Butterworth noted this from the singing of Mr. Edmund Knight in Washington near Sunderland in December 1907.
All around my hat I will wear the green willow. All around my hat for a 12-month and a day. Should ask me the reason why I wear it, I'll tell them my true love is far, far away. Young men are false, and they are so deceitful. Young men are false, and they seldom do prove true. Changing, they are always seeking some young girl that's new.
Why, though, should the willow be a symbol of grief? It is, after all, a beautiful and useful tree, providing baskets, cricket bats and aspirin. I suppose there is the obvious fact of their physical being. They weep. There is a willow grows aslant a brook that shows his hoar leaves in the glassy stream. It's no coincidence that Ophelia drowns falling from a willow. The association goes back a long, long way. The psalmist wrote, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept, when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof." The translators of the King James Bible had to find an equivalent, as weeping willows, despite their Latin name Salix Babylonica, don't naturally occur in the Middle East. The trees the exiled Israelites hung their instruments in were, it's thought, Euphrates poplars. And palm trees didn't grow in Britain, so willow branches were used instead in churches on Palm Sunday, a day of celebration, but one which heralds Christ's passion, his betrayal, abandonment, and death. One of the most interesting willow songs is Bitter Withy, a class war story about Christ's childhood.
As it fell out on a bright holiday, small hail from the sky did it fall. Sweet Jesus asked his mother dear if he might go and play at ball.
Some posh boys refuse to let Jesus play with them, so he builds him a bridge with the rays of the sun, creates a rainbow. The aristocrats run up it, it disappears, and they fall to their deaths.
With the beams of the sun and over the water ran he, and the three young lords chased after him, and they were drowned all three.
Mary punishes her son by beating him with a withy, a willow cane, and he curses the tree, and that's why you often see willows by rivers that are split and broken.
Oh, Mary Mile, she took her child and placed him across her knee, and with a handful of a withy to which she gave him slashes three. Oh, bitter withy, you've caused me to smart, and now the withy shall be the very first tree to perish at the heart.
This is a recording the singer and criminologist Roy Bailey made in 1970. By the 16th century, forsaken lovers really did wear crowns of willow leaves, and later, willow boughs began to appear on gravestones. This is an aspect of a quite sophisticated system of plant and flower symbolism. Ophelia, abandoned and mad with grief, retains some knowledge of this as she hands out her herbs.
There's rosemary. That's for remembrance. Pray you, love, remember. And there is pansies, that's for thoughts. There's fennel for you, and columbines. There's rue for you, and here's some for me. We may call it herb of grace or Sundays. Oh, you must wear your rue with a difference. There's a daisy. I would give you some violets, but they withered all when my father died. They say he made a good end.
The Seeds of Love works in this way too. It's one of the most famous English folk songs because it was the first that Cecil Sharp collected in 1903 from the wonderfully named gardener John England. The gardener in the song chooses flowers for a forlorn lover, the violet, the lily and the pink, each of which has a specific meaning. The violet, modesty, lily, purity and the pink, courtesy. But she refuses them all, until he offers roses and, of course, the willow. It's thought that a Mrs. Fleetwood Habergham wrote this in 1689.
Oh, the violet I did not like, because it bloomed too soon. The lily and the pink I did really overthink, so I vowed I'd stay till June. I vowed I'd stay till June. For in June there grows a red rose bud, and that is the flower for me. I oft-times have plucked that red rosebud till I gain the willow tree, till I gain the willow tree. Oh, the willow tree, it will twist, and the willow tree, it will twine. I wish I was in that young man's arms that once stole the heart of mine, that once stole the heart of mine. Come, all you false young men, do not leave me to complain, for the grass that has oft-times been trampled underfoot, give it time, it will rise again. Give it time, it will rise again.
There's a note of hope in that final stanza, the possibility of love in the future, and there are songs in which the willow does not symbolise grief exactly, so much as evoke a bucolic emotional intensity, the folk song equivalent of a pastoral romantic painting. A willow grove provides seclusion, a place of intimacy. This is Meet Me in the Willow Glen from the Broadside collection of Frank Kidson.
Meet me in the willow glen, where the silvery moon is gleaming. Songs of love I'll sing you then, when the world is still in dreaming. If you meet me in the willow glen, no prying eye will come, my love, no stranger foot be seen, and all the village of my love will echo on the wind. If you'll meet me in the willow glen, so meet me in the willow glen, where the silvery moon is gleaming. Songs of love I'll sing you then, when the world is still in dreaming. If you meet me in the willow glen.
In classical mythology, the willow has particular significance because Orpheus, the original and most successful singer-songwriter, carried willow with him on his journey through the underworld. So the wind in the willows signifies poetic inspiration, the presence of the muse. Kenneth Graham knew this, and in his book of that title, published in 1908, and just when the song collectors were at work, Ratty is a poet, and the mole has a vision of Pan. And while in folk song the willow is often associated with abandonment and grief, it isn't always. And in dance tunes there is abandonment and joy, as anyone who's ever stripped the willow in a ceilidh will recognise. The village of Bampton in Oxfordshire has a Morris tradition dating back centuries. Every Whitsun, they dance to this happy tune. It's called The Willow.
Fiddle playing of John Bowden of Bellowhead, ending I Will Wear the Green Willow, which was presented by Faye Heal. The reader was Georgie Fuller, and the programme was produced by Julian May. And this is Petroc Trelawney welcoming you back to the first of our visits to the Proms this Saturday. Brahms' German Requiem and Schumann's Fourth Symphony at 7:30, as Marin Alsop makes her first Proms appearance this year with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Still to come this afternoon, opera by Verdi and Tchaikovsky, and a waltz and a polka by Johann Strauss Jr., conducted by Andres Nelsons, much admired by his CBSO musicians.
It's absolutely fantastic to work with him. He's so exciting. He doesn't miss a single emotion, big climaxes, or those quiet moments that make you catch your breath. Every concert is like a gripping story.
The nice thing, he's such a modest man, which I have to say is rare amongst conductors. I've been playing in orchestras for 40 years, and I've got to say he's the most modest conductor I've ever played for, not to mention him being probably the most talented. Tremendous amount to offer an orchestra. Great man.
Bryony, this is your second appearance at the proms with the CBSO. Before that, you were here with the National Youth Orchestra.
Yes, I think 10 years ago exactly was my first prom ever, but it doesn't get any less exciting when you get given your proms pass the day before. It's still a real thrill, really exciting to be here, and of course, wonderful to be here with the CBSO and with Andrus.
Peter, is it true it's the 40th anniversary of your first proms appearance?
It is actually, yes. I was in the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, and it was a great privilege to get a prom in those days because most of the concerts, I think, were played by the BBC Symphony Orchestra. So for a regional orchestra to get a prom, it was very, very special. And it's a great privilege always to come to the proms. They're such an unusual audience, different. I mean, they're very appreciative. It's fantastic. Great honour.
Timpanist Peter Hill, and we also heard from Bryony Morrison, second violin in the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. Well, Verdi's music first in part two of our concert, The Willow Song and Ave Maria from Otello. Verdi, a great fan of Shakespeare. When he was criticised over his setting of Macbeth, he responded angrily, "I've had Shakespeare in my hands from my earliest youth, and I read and reread him continuously." King Lear, The Tempest and Hamlet were amongst the other Shakespeare projects that Verdi considered before he settled on Otello in the mid-1880s. On this afternoon's soloist, Christina Opelais, told me The Willow Song and Ave Maria opened the opera's fourth act.
It's actually, it's so touching and I would say it's crying music because this is the moment when Desdemona has, like all women, I think, intuition that probably this is the last minutes or hours or day she's alive. And then, of course, coming Ave Maria, which is absolutely amazing. And this is just a prayer, you know. And it's really crying music, and I'm always trying to sing because the tears are coming as I'm religious. So it's a big challenge for me, and it's not easy to sing it with a lot of colors. I feel always with this piece, which I'm not sing often, like tête-à-tête with a God, you know. And at that moment, I really feel alone.
And here comes Christina Opelais with her husband, Andrus Nelsons, to join the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra in The Willow Song and Ave Maria from Verdi's Otello.
Thank you. Thank you.
Christina Opalis, her hands clasped in prayer. She performed Ave Maria and before it the Willow Song from Verdi's Otello. Her husband Andrus Nelson's conducting the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra here at the Proms. Preparing the way for the entrance of Otello and the terrible culmination of Iago's plot. As Andrew Huth writes in the programme this afternoon, Verdi reaching a musical and dramatic summit with Otello that allowed him to express the subtlest shades of human nature. Part of our celebrations of Verdi's bicentenary, Aida, Force of Destiny, Simone Boccanegra and La Traviata amongst the operas featured on September the 5th when Joseph Calea joins the Verdi Orchestra Milan here at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, Tchaikovsky next, an opera suggested to him by a singer, the mezzo-soprano Yelizaveta Lavrovskaya, who told him he should adopt Pushkin's Eugene Onegin for the stage. Wild was Tchaikovsky's first response to the proposal. We're going to hear the Polonaise, and then Christina will sing the letter scene, with Tatiana staying up all night to pour out her heart to Onegin.
This is a piece for women. Every woman had it one day, when you want to speak to your big love for the first time, you know, and you just want to open your heart. Let's say it's very colorful music, because there is a lot of softness and also very passion moments. Tatiana's mood is changed every second, and you can feel it in the music. The music is so colorful, and I really do love this scene because I can play as actress, which is very important for me because I see myself more actress than singer, actually. It's like a short performance on stage, and it's amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I feel so happy always to sing Tatiana's letter.
Well, she will return to the stage to sing the letter scene shortly, but first of all we hear the Polonaise from Eugene Onegin. Andrus Nelson's conducts the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
The Polonaise from Eugene Onegin. Andras Nelsons leaves the stage to go and collect his wife, soprano Christina Opelis, to sing next the letter scene from Eugene Onegin. She is 33, he's 34. He's just been appointed music director of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, the youngest music director of the orchestra in 100 years. She made her Covent Garden debut in Madame Butterfly in 2011, conducted by Andras Nelsons. Has 14 title roles under her belt at leading opera houses all over the world, fulfilling her mother's dream, as she says, to become a famous opera star. So to Tatiana's bedroom, nighttime. She's seated before her mirror in her nightdress, remaining for a long time lost in thought, then gets up very agitated with an expression of determination on her face. The letter scene from Eugene Onegin.
Вас ты нам не узнали никогда.
One of those Proms performances that will not quickly be forgotten. The letter scene from Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, sung by Christina Opelais with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andris Nelsons. I've finished, sings Tatiana, having written her letter. I'm frightened to read it. I'm paralyzed with shame and fear. But his honour is my guarantee, and courageously I entrust myself to it. Christina Opelais, born, like her husband Andris Nelsons, in Latvia. She studied there and in Amsterdam. Was a soloist at Latvian National Opera between 2003 and 2007. Andris Nelsons used to play trumpet in the Opera House Orchestra. Here she comes back on stage alone this time, wearing a wonderful bell-shaped dress covered in flowers. Blows kisses to the audience in front. Behind her, Prommers in the arena. Made her long-awaited Met debut in New York in January this year, singing Magda in Puccini's La Rondinée. And this is exciting. She was telling me earlier, next season, next year, she's going to be singing alongside Jonas Kaufmann in a new production of Puccini's Manon Lescaut at the Royal Opera House here in London. Saturday afternoon at the Proms, live on BBC Radio 3. Don't forget, by the way, Proms Extra on BBC 2 at 7 o'clock this evening. Katie Derham will be joined by the trumpeter Tina Ting-Helsett, singer Laura Mvula, and the vocal coach and choral teacher and conductor Mary King to discuss this week's Proms. Also an interview with the first female conductor to lead the last night of the Proms, Marin Olsop, who will be on duty here this very evening at the Proms, conducting the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Proms Extra at 7 o'clock. If you've missed any of our other TV coverage this week, an all-Verdi evening with Antonio Pappano and the Santa Cecilia Orchestra. That was on Thursday night, and John Elliott Gardner conducting Bach last night, both available to watch again via the Proms website. And remember to follow the links to watch and listen on the Proms website if you want to catch up with our Monday Proms chamber concerts, this week featuring Holst, father and daughter, BBC singers performing the UK premiere of Harrison Birtwistle's Moth Requiem. bbc.co.uk/proms. Follow the links to watch and listen. Well, to finish this afternoon, two works by Johann Strauss Jr. He was a star of Vienna, of course, but his career stretched much further afield. He conducted regular seasons in St. Petersburg. He wooed Queen Victoria in London. And in 1889, he signed a contract with a new concert hall in Berlin, for whom he wrote the next work, The Emperor Waltz. Originally named Hand in Hand, inspired by an actual event, the toast made by the Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph I on the occasion of his visit to the German Kaiser Wilhelm II. Andreas Nelsons returns to the platform to conduct the CBSO in Strauss's Emperor Waltz. The Kaiser Waltz, or Emperor Waltz by Johann Strauss II. Now from Eduardo Vassallo, principal cellist in the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. As a review by a Vienna paper noted, the latest waltz begins in a Prussian martial mood. Was premiered in Berlin, don't forget, one really sees and hears the guards of old Fritz, Frederick II of Prussia, marching by. But then the Viennese in the composer prevails, and everything once again takes on the usual truly Viennese style. Animated dash and swing. Well, based on that, Andras Nelsons must open himself up as a candidate to be at the Musikverein in Vienna one New Year's Day before too long to conduct that legendary concert. I say legendary, it's interesting to note that rather like people think of the Vienna New Year's Day concert as being something of an ancient tradition, it's actually a relatively modern thing invented during World War II, so it was that the idea of a Viennese night at the proms didn't start until the 1950s, when John Barbaroli and the Halle pioneered the form. And we're going to finish the concert with a work that Barbaroli introduced at one of those concerts, 1958, Donner and Blitzen. What a cracking conclusion to a glorious Saturday matinee here at the Proms. Johann Strauss Jr., the Thunder and Lightning Polka. Originally conceived for the ball of the Vienna Artists Association in 1868. Andras Nelsons, arms out wide as he bows to his orchestra and to the capacity audience here at the Proms. He becomes music director designate of the Boston Symphony Orchestra from the start of the new season. Music director in a year's time, the title he continues to with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. He'll be taking the CBSO on tour later this month to Wiesbaden, Locarno, Stadt and Bremen, and then back at Symphony Hall in time to start the new season on September the 19th with Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And having heard the orchestra performing that wonderful letter scene from Eugen Onegin earlier, do listen again if you missed it. They give an all Tchaikovsky programme on Wednesday the 25th of September, which we will broadcast live in concert here on Radio 3. Well, we're back at the Royal Albert Hall in 2.25 hours' time. Marin Alsop, conductor of the last night, makes her first appearance this season with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, German Requiem by Brahms and Schumann's Fourth Symphony. You can hear the stamping and the clapping. Rewarded now by the return of Andras Nelsons, making his way back out, mounting the rostrum, bringing the orchestra to its feet. And with that, time to bid you for now very good afternoon from the Proms, back to Ian Skelly at Broadcasting House.
Petrak, thank you very much indeed. And not only can you hear that concert again by going to the Radio 3 website and finding your way to the iPlayer radio, you can also hear it on Thursday afternoon on Radio 3 when it forms our Proms repeat from 2 o'clock.
Berlioz, Mendelssohn, Bach and Beethoven with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra and one of this year's featured Proms artists, the pianist Stephen Huff. Liszt astounded Mendelssohn by sight-reading his first piano concerto in a piano showroom in Paris in 1831. How will Stephen Huff fare with hopefully a little more preparation time? I'm Martin Handley. Join me at the BBC Proms on Monday night at 7 o'clock.
And I'll be at the Royal College of Music in the run-up to that prom, talking to Professor Kenneth Hamilton on stage at the college to explore the history of the Romantic Piano Concerto. Just how did such concertos come to be? Should be a fascinating journey. Join me if you are coming to that prom in person at 5:15 on Monday afternoon, and you'll hear the fruits of our conversation during the interval in our broadcast that night.